I'm doing a series this week on the parables of Jesus. Under the general title is A Story More Than a Story. And today we're doing the parable of the sower, which normally we read in Mark 4, but I'd like to read from Luke 8, 4 through 8. And the general top, the sort of lead-in line is 100% profit enough? I begin with a piece of the Holden Prayer. Lord, who has called us your servants to ventures of which we cannot see the end, guide us through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. At first Bible study, somebody reminded me of something that I really think is a good way to do it. So that's the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to read the focus of the study first. And then I'm going to take a little ambling walk up the valley, and then we'll come back to the text again. We'll focus in on the text, and I'll put you to work. I want to read the parable of the sower from the Gospel of Luke. The Lucan version of the parable is shorter than the Markan version. One of the things you notice, this is what I'm working with here is simply the gospel text, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, printed in parallel columns. Something like slide rule for Bible folks. And it shows you at a glance how a story varies from Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And sometimes those variations are helpful, and even if they're not helpful, they keep reminding you that there's something about the Bible which is a process, and something about the Bible which is dynamic and growing and not static. Let me read the parable. A sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell among the path, and was trodden underfoot, and the birds of the air devoured it, the seed on the path. And some fell on the rock, and as it grew up, it withered away because it had no moisture. Seed among the rock. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew with it and choked it. Seed in the thorns. And some fell into good soil and grew and yielded 100-fold. Our agenda for Bible study is conversation at crossroads. Most of us here are at junctures in our life. We are at the frontier of a piece of civilization and the wilderness. And most of us will taste here the nurture of a little piece of the wilderness. We are at the intersection where we meet old friends and talk to some of our family like we haven't had time to talk to them for since holidays, where we make new friends and there are new conversations. And hopefully Holden for people is a crossroads in conversations with themselves. And if conversation, deep conversation with yourself, then a conversation with God. And almost all of us come away from Holden with some shifts in priorities. Sometimes new visions, sometimes new concerns or burdens, and sometimes simply a shifting around of priorities, so that we can do things a little differently, put some things ahead of others. So it's crossroads, and most of us are about the conversations which are sharing our stories and hopefully conversations with some of the stories in the Bible. These 2 weeks I've been doing stories in Luke Acts. First week was stories that are about Jesus, and this week it's stories that Jesus told. I'm concerned about stories because I think there's something alive and growing about a story. Every time a story is repeated in the Bible, it's told a little bit differently and changes a little bit, just like every time we tell our story, it changes a little bit and shifts emphasis. Because a story is a way of deciding what's important, not just of remembering it word for word. And if we can get some Bible stories around and our own stories around, there can be some pretty interesting conversations about our lives and the lives of the Christian community. For this kind of Bible study, I have a strategy and a plan. Question number one is, what is the action? I want to underline this one. I left the top off. What is the action? Here it is. Thanks. When Jesus told the story, the parables, he wasn't concentrating on himself, he was telling a story. They're kind of street corner things, and the people that came focused on the story. When the stories were written down and remembered and read it in the community, people began to decide what they meant for the community and what they meant now. But when Jesus told the story, they were just out there for one person to get one thing and another person to get another thing. And it's for this week, I want you to try to get the sense of the kind of seed story that Jesus told. And you will notice that the stories are seeds. It's not accidental that we're doing the parable of the sower. Stories are beginnings. They're not endings. In fact, maybe the Bible is leaven and light, not the answers. Some of the problems with the church is that people aren't asking the right questions. If they'd read the Bible more, maybe they'd ask the right questions. If we ask the right questions, we get closer to doing good things than if we don't ask questions at all. So, what's the action of the story? And we'll work on that a little bit. And out of that will emerge, what are the clues to conversation? What where does this story bump you? Now, it's very important to be honest with the Bible. I am so tired of Christians who fake it with the Bible. They fake it with the Bible. They're not honest about where they are. And so they act like they swallow a first century worldview when nobody does. They act like they use the whole Bible, which nobody does. They bring all sorts of illusions about themselves to the Bible. And if you're going to have a good conversation with the Bible, you got to be honest. If it seems way far away in first century, you've got to say so you can talk about it. The thing I learned from the book of Job is that some of the best conversations with God happen when you are honest about where you are. So you got to be honest with the Bible. There's something about this text that disappoints me terribly. And that's the beginning of a conversation. There's something about the text that speaks right to you, and that's the beginning of a conversation. But God wants to have a conversation. He doesn't just want to hit you over the head and put you into a box and plug a videotape into you and have you play a tape. So you've got to be honest, and that means questions, insights, and that's what we're about here, so that you can go on and think about the text and finally decide what to do with the text. The Bible comes out of action situations. These stories are kind of street story, street corner tales. The teaching of Jesus in Luke is on a journey wandering up the valley. Or wandering down the other side of Jordan, to be exact, but it's a little bit like walking up the creeks towards Heart Lake. Everything's in process. In Luke, everything's on a journey. Jesus is on a journey. Paul is on a journey. The disciples are on a journey. They are not settled. They're in motion. They're in motion. If only the church, the community of disciples, would remember that they were on a journey. And not that they owned the place and possessed the place, but they're on a journey. In fact, the whole, you know that there's Luke and Acts go together. And the big thing about Luke-Acts is that only chapter 1 is the Jesus journey. Chapter 2, the book of Acts, is the beginning of the church journey. The Spirit baptizes Jesus, and things start moving. The Spirit, after the death and resurrection of Jesus, the Spirit baptizes the church, and things start moving. And they're on a journey. And Acts ends at the beginning. The Gospel of Mark says, as the title for the book of Mark, the beginning of the Gospel of Jesus Christ. Not the end. The beginning. So, these come out of action situations. What I want you to do when you go away from here, maybe we'll even get to it in the session, what I want you to do is think about what to do with this story. Is this a story you want to put away? Is this a story you want to reread? Do you want to write another parable for your family, for your community? How do you want to do it? What gesture do you want to make with this seed? With this seed. Let me read the parable once more, and then we'll go to work. It's pretty simple, but you're going to have to work this is a rich community. This is a rich community. The fun of being at Holden is to listen to other people's stories. A sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some fell among the path, along the path, and was trodden underfoot, and the birds of the air devoured it. And some fell on the rock, and it grew up, and it withered away because it had no moisture. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew with it and choked it. And some fell into good soil and grew and yielded 100-fold. Thus endeth the Jesus story. They're just a couple of little things I want you to notice about the story. Who's the main character in the story?
Sower.
Sower, the only character in the story. So it's got to be the main character in the story, and he's at the beginning and the end. So that's, notice that. One of the things about a story is that you can plug into the story at one point, and you can plug in at another point, and you can plug in at another point. Stories are just wonderful. Not if you're trying to put people into a straitjacket, because they don't all plug in at the same place, and they don't come out at the same place, but they're just wonderful. Okay, so story. The sower's the only one. The other thing I want you to notice is the time lapses. A sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some fell on the path and was trodden underfoot, and the birds of the air devoured it. So you notice how what happens to each seed is spelled out in kind of a little scene. So it falls on the path, and then pretty soon, a little bit later, the birds of the air come. And some fell on the rock, okay? And it grew up. Well, now that didn't happen in 30 minutes. You know, it grew up, which means several weeks. It withered away because there wasn't, it doesn't wither the first day there's no rain. It withers when there isn't rain. For several days. So notice that one is a little different. Some fell among thorns, and it was time. Now granted that the thorns grow faster than the seed, that's why they choke out the seed. They're tougher or grabbier or something. But that's a time. Notice that this story is compressing a big story into a little story, and Luke even makes it smaller than Mark did. And some fell into good soil and grew and yielded 100-fold. Now that took till harvest time. From how long is it from planting to harvest? At least, depending on your place. This is fairly well in Palestine. There's a moisture season and a dry season, and so I don't know how many crops a year in Palestine. One, probably two. Okay, so there's a time compression. The other thing I want you to notice is what's the pattern of what happens to the seed. Do you notice any pattern in this seed falls here, and this seed falls here, and this seed falls here, and this seed falls here? What's the pattern to that?
Each one grew a little longer,
but what else is the big pattern?
Continue to be sown.
They all sowed. Now they're all alike in that the seed was sown. Each one lived a little longer, so there's kind of a vignette of walking through the summer. What's the big thing about the pattern in those three, in those four? What?
They grew.
Which one grew? Okay. Okay, there's your big pattern. You see, three of them didn't grow very much. One of them didn't grow at all. The other one grew just a little bit, barely got off the ground. The next one got a little ways, and only one of them produced a crop. So you got that? One, two, a triad. People like threes. Three ended up with a bum ending, and one grew. Okay, now, what do you make out of this text?
The sower was very careless.
I always tell my students to try to get them out of looking at this as making it a Jesus story too quickly, is that it's a good ag extension story on how to be a stupid farmer. So now if you're looking at it from the point of view of the sower, what sense do you make of that?
Maybe he had abundant seed.
Choose where you put your seed.
Okay.
Or pull the weeds.
Okay. That's in the story. That's right. We have some indication that there's a difference between our time and their time. That in their time, this wasn't unusual low-tech agriculture. Palestine is a pretty rocky place. There's a lot of places where you fill the soil, so you sort of sow it on the good soil, but you sort of sow it other places, maybe sort of by accident and maybe for luck. But the sower was, this was very, very slow, labor intensive, not very soil aware agriculture. That's right. Can you say something?
So maybe he had abundant seed. Care
where it fell. Birds needed food too.
Yeah. Farming is a gamble.
What?
Farming is a gamble.
You sound like a farmer.
My grandparents were.
There's something about living with the unpredictableness of weather. We've begun to get soil a little more under control. But then, you know, there's kind of a story in that, because when human beings get something under control, they think they're going to do it for good, and then they end up causing real problems. So now we're going to get insecticided to death, and we've got to go at it a whole new way. And one of the sad stories of the third world is when we took high-tech machinery to third world places where nobody knew how to use it, and created all sorts of problems for them, because they really needed a labor-intensive kind of agriculture and other kinds of techniques that were more appropriate to their economy. So technology is a funny thing. We even have hospitals that make people sick, and but we have soil sort of under control, and now it's out of control in another way. But the weather's never been quite under control. Well, some of the irrigation, I suppose, is a way of managing the weather. What else is in the story?
Question. Commenting to the lady's comment about cares with the seed where it's sown. If we are to sow our seed, are we to be selective where we sow our seed, our faith?
Well, what do you think? What does the story say to you? Huh?
I don't think we are. It's not my place to judge as to who is receptive of it, to the sowing.
Okay, what I hear you saying is right away for you, the seed has to do with your testimony and sharing your faith. It's not about soil. Okay?
Not initially, I don't think. I can sow on a given piece of ground. And the survival of that crop depends largely upon what I do after I sow the seed.
You're talking now about sharing your faith, right? You're not talking about, are you talking about farming or you're talking about?
Sharing the faith.
Sharing the faith, okay. Now, notice you're already moving to the Christian group. Here's Jesus, and this person may be a disciple, this person won't be a disciple. They haven't got Christian communities yet. And already I hear you talking like the interpretation of the parable of the sower, which is in verse 11, which really sounds very much like when they were already organized as a community. And there's no question that the early Christians saw this whole business of sowing and hearing and as about their sharing of their faith.
It's like teaching a school teacher teaching a class. As some kids are just not going to learn it because they don't understand it well enough, they're too slow. And some kids could care less, and some kids will take the idea further and grasp the idea and maybe go further study about it.
Okay, what do you get out of that? I mean, what's in it for you in that kind of a story? What does the story say to you? I hear you saying that, hey, there's growth and change in every part of life. And that there's something even about the way people grow that is like the way seed grows. We are part of we are organic beings. We are, and this is a parable. This is a parable where the fundamental image is of growing, something growing and alive. And there are a number of, you know, can you think of some of the other parables where things grow? Mustard seed, certainly. Fig tree is a growing thing and withering. Wheat and the tares is growing. So there are lots of, Jesus picks a lot of farm growing universe stories to talk about.
I think it's the sower's planting the seed and it's how you take the seed. It's just like the child with the teacher. But whether he's going to take the seed and grow from it and learn from it.
Okay, you're applying.
It's how
you
take it. It's how you yourself take the seed of learning or of the faith, or you can just let it rot away, or you can, you know, grow from it and learn from it.
This is a really important. You're right, that faith is something that is given to us, and whether we are responsible about it or not responsible about it has something to do with our own gifts, our own vision, our own awareness, where the Spirit is in our life. And that's one of the reasons that I'm trying to get you all to talk about this text and to think about what to do with the text. And one of the crucial issues for the community of faith right now is what it's going to do with the gospel. What it's going to do with how it understands the gospel and whether it understands the gospel as for the settled or whether it understands the gospel for the poor. So that's a really important observation. One of the things that disappoints me about this parable, I sort of grieve, because when I read the Luke story of Jesus in Luke 4, listen to this, when Jesus walks into his home congregation and he starts quoting from Isaiah 61 and he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, recovering of sight to the blind, and to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord," which probably means the Jubilee year. That's a pretty amazing statement of gospel. In other words, for Jesus to say, quote the text where he has anointed me to preach to the poor, most of us preach to the middle class. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives, almost all, and I believe that Jesus meant this verse literally. We don't come very near the prisons. And recovering of sight to the blind, well, we do have a little more to do with the ill, to set at liberty those who are oppressed. Half of us don't even know our own oppression, and to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Wow, when I go from that verse in Luke 4 to Jesus' little story, well, the early Christians clearly were not as evangelical as the modern evangelicals, because they placed a lot of responsibility on ethics, but they didn't place as much emphasis on the act of decision. But we do live in a highly individualistic time, and I think that that's one of the things that some of us feel a strong sense of responsibility to do, and that is to nurture decision and conviction and commitment. But I think you're dead right that in the story, in the Jesus story, there's no single, in fact, seed isn't an image. You have parables we're going to do the parable of the shepherd, and we're going to do the parable of the woman searching for the coin tomorrow. We're going to do the prodigal son and the good Samaritan. And if you look at the prodigal son one, you have a real awakening and a coming to a new consciousness and sense of responsibility. And that, or maybe you do, maybe you don't, but you have a little more like that. But this is, seed is, after all, not a person. See, this is a story about a sower and seed. That's all that Jesus said. But what I want you to see, is that Jesus told a story that started conversations. And it's okay to take a Jesus story and make it a conversation of your own with your time and your place, because you're plugged in someplace, and it probably isn't first century Palestine. And you've got problems to solve that are your problems. You've got things to do that are your responsibility. And it's okay to let the Bible seed your sense of responsibility. But I think you're right. I don't think that the Jesus story says anything about seed being responsible or irresponsible. It's a crazy little story. It's a crazy little story. Ingrid?
I think Ann just said that the seed is the word of, if the seed is the word of God, that the soil is the people, and that the people are afflicted by things that they can't control, and not to blame. That the stronger weeds around you aren't your fault, and that the rack that you're given to live in is not your fault. and that there are forces that are bigger than any of us that make us mean-spirited and ungenerous and unable to respond and wicked in ways or hard or whatever.
If you carried the analogy of the story out, the seed and the soil together are some kind of milieu, and neither one are exactly responsible for what happened. But you're still reading the story as about people. Maybe it's about seed. There's still a simple thrust of this story that we haven't found. Before you take it to being seed and people and testimonies, just what is the point of this story?
I don't know what the point of the story is of what you're talking about, but I remember when I was a child thinking I'd love to be that soil and throw that seed, and how much joy there was in just throwing. And I still would like to go out and just throw that seed, and where it fell, and where it grew, and I wasn't responsible for where it fell or what it did, it just did throw it.
Wonderful image.
I'm a farmer, and one thing was important to point out here, you're sowing seed, but who says that actually the seed itself is good? Because not all seed is the same.
I was noticing, though, that some of the seed yields 100-fold. That, for me, is the great glory of the story, that some of the seed is very productive, and it is yielding 100-fold, and I glory in the rich harvest and productivity of that seed.
That certainly is the punchline of the story, isn't it? That certainly is the punchline. Why don't we read that one again? And some fell into good soil and yielded and grew and yielded 100-fold. Do you want to say any more about that? What would that mean to the disciples? What would that mean to the people around?
I think it's a great hope and a great realization that this good news is going someplace and it is going to have success, and the story has begun and it's moving towards a successful, triumphant conclusion.
Possibilities.
It's going to have a good crop. I just want to share one of my concerns. I work with freshmen every year. I work with about 70 freshmen every year, and one of the most difficult things for me is that many of them come not hoping to be productive and to achieve and to be good, but to be successful. In other words, I think American society, success is an okay word, but American society has taken the word success and made it an absolutely oppressive thing for some young adults. I know young adults who spend 15 years learning that they can be productive but don't have to live up to the dreams that their parents didn't do. Because one of the big things that we do as parents, I'm responding to the word, not to where you're at, you know. But I'm worried about the word, so I liked your first word better, where you said this was a great crop, a big crop, a rich crop. Because sometimes being successful means that we cut all kinds of corners, which in the end mean that the quality of life goes down and the nature of responsibility goes down, I liked it. I grew up, I mean, I've lived a long time, and I liked it in a world where people were anxious to do good work and excellent work, but weren't so worried about being successful. I liked it better back then. So I'm a little allergic to that word, but I think you're right on that. One of the big things, if we had been disciples and had seen people come in and then go away and come in and go away and come in and go away, we'd need some encouragement. And the promise that the sum of the stuff grows and produces rich fruit. Just look at the harvest. Some of that stuff grows and produces a crop. Take your lesson from the creation and have some hope. And they were going to need it, because the story of the Jesus story was going to be a tough, tough, tough story.
I get out of it too. There's something about satisfying hunger with this crop that was received just from the seed, and the seed wasn't hoarded or it wasn't saved just to eat it all, but that it was thrown out, and then that it did provide food for the, perhaps for the sower and perhaps for others too.
It's amazing how rich a metaphor seed and growing is. Just look at the plants, imagine the plants, imagine these as a parables. We stopped in the redwoods on the way up the coast, and we had just a few minutes in a redwood grove, and a woman told they were 800 to 1,000 years old. And they were 300 foot tall, and she says, you know, they don't have much of a root system, but they have interlocking roots. They have interlocking roots. They hang in there because they're hanging on to each other, way down underneath the, isn't that a wonderful story? Isn't that a wonderful story?
Sorry, starting with your thought and looking at what Jesus, who Jesus was talking to at the time, first century, and wondering if there isn't some more coded words in here that we don't quite understand, coded to the Jewish people listening at that time, because that phrase, let him who has ears hear, you know, as if you guys understand this, you know. I'm wondering if he's referring to a revolution coming, that he is leading it. And there are many other quote, messiahs that claim to be messiahs, and that he is the one that will bear the fruit.
That's an intriguing one. There was a rebellion in Galilee. Certainly the fact of lots of messiahs around are Christ figures claiming Christ's work that makes for different kinds of interpretations of Jesus, and he has to, there's a big thing in the gospel when he says, well, you don't understand me, you just don't understand me, you got me wrong. And Mark, one of the major points in the book of Mark is that the disciples who were with him all the time really didn't understand him. The gospel of Mark blows me away. It makes the early Christian group becoming disciples look just as much of a struggle and a sweat as now.
I almost get a feel of predestination, almost a matter of choice, pre-chosen.
with where the seed fell. And changes a lot.
Well, now I hear one of the major debates in the history of the church being articulated. One is, do we focus on the arbitrariness of grace? Do we focus on the fact that it happens or it doesn't happen? Or do we focus on the responsibility people have for the word? I think that's a major conversation, and it will go on in our churches, and I think we have to keep working it through to find the right answer for each time and maybe for different people. But I think that's, you've got both a very passive image, like soil, and it's different kinds of soil. Yeah. So it is a, but the story is just, you know, remember that most of what we have made, we know as doctrine, is after the Bible. It's the result of real experiences that people have had, and sharing experiences, and arguing over strategies, and is a wonderful proof that these are, you know, what's fascinating in the Jesus stories is to see the little bubbling fountain before all of these arguments have happened, which is so simple and so understated.
Going back to what you said at the beginning about taking a story like this as simply as possible, I can remember when we farmed, of course, we sold the machinery, but there were some patches that you hand sewed. And I can't think of walking out and intentionally sewing or not, or trying to sow any place other than where the soil was tilled. But certainly when you dipped in into the seed bag and brought out a handful of seeds, some was going to fall on the path you were walking. And as you spread your arm back and forth and sowed the seeds, some was going to go over there where there were some rocks because you hadn't tilled it. And some was going to go along the fence line where the weeds were growing up. You didn't expect anything to grow there anyway, but the deer was going to die. But your main emphasis was going to be in that patch of ground that you had prepared, that you had tilled. That's where you wanted the most of your seed to go. Does that have anything to do here? Does that have anything to do?
Well, that's plugging into the waste notion in the beginning, that our ways of sowing are probably different than those in first century Palestine.
But even and I appreciate your comments there that they probably didn't take the time to remove all the rocks and so forth, but even the sowers at that time, especially with, I would think, a scarcity of seed, would have concentrated, would they not, in having sown in an area where the soil was tilled and where they thought the crop was going to grow?
Well, you go for redundancy to ensure that you get seed on the good ground. I've done the same thing as you have.
But even so, even the first century farmers just thought, well, here's an area that I have tilled, and sure, I haven't pulled all the rocks off, but I'm going to try and get most of the seed in the area where I've tilled.
Well, I think you've got the makings of a PhD in first century farming, and if you get it done, I'd like to know the answer. The stuff that I read. Leo, do you know some more about first century farming?
No, but I have a question that perplexes me. As a birder, as a bird watcher, of course, I'm very grateful that they threw out enough seed so the birds could have some. But the other thing that bothers me, and if you think it's too incidental, perplexes me, we can discuss it later, but is that birds of the air, and What is the writer got against the birds that spend most of the time on the ground? I mean, why doesn't he just say birds? Birds of the air.
Well, as the poets have their style, I think that there's some pretty good evidence that there's a poetry to the language, and that Jesus is plugged into the poetry of the language, and It could be some editor not missing the poetry too, but I don't know. I think it's style. Some people say things the long way around, and some people say it just very simply. And this is pretty simple as stories go. But another thing about storytellers, if you tell a story and people listen to it, you add a little bit the next time, even if you don't need it. So that's one of the things you really have to do about a story, is to decide what's essential and what isn't. Somebody else was saying something.
Well, if what I was saying there is just something that's in my mind, it's the first century farming. Let me take the next step. If you were going to use this story today, not in 20th century America, but in another agricultural area outside of Palestine, where they did prepare their fields and they tried to prepare their fields before they sowed seed. Would you use this story?
Well, you tell me.
I don't know.
Would you use it? I think that's a good point at which to shift from the subtlety of the story to what would you do with this story? We know some things that the early church did with the story. But what would you do? One of the tricks with a story, one of the really important things about stories and metaphors, is that there's a force and energy in the story. Okay? There's an analogy. There's some force and energy in that. And you want as much of that energy to plow into your use of it as possible. And some of our, I have heard more sermons on the wrong text than you can imagine. They were awfully good sermons, but they didn't come out of the text that the preacher was preaching on. They came out of some other text. And I get these exegeses from my students, and they're exegeting a prophet, and before you know it, they've tossed in a little bit of Revelation, and they've tossed in a little bit of the gospel, and they haven't stuck to the text they were with at all, but which is all right for personal growth. But the thing is that if you want the force of the story in what you do, then you got to find something that has something to do with the story. So let's switch to the question: what gestures? What would you do with this? What do you want to do with this text, this story?
I'd like to, I don't know whether this is answering the question, but it's been sort of whirling in my mind that in my life, I've been all the soils. There have been times when the seed has landed on some real dry spots in my life, and it didn't sprout. It withered or died, was plucked away. Other times, the seed took root and grew, and then I was able to maybe produce. Does that make any sense? You look real puzzled.
No, I think it makes sense. I think you're talking about growth. I think you're talking about faith journey with Jesus as a growth process, as something that we go through different. We go through valleys, we took the, one of the really beautiful hikes is the one down lower Railroad Creek Falls. It's a 13-mile hike, don't do it the first one. And we left at 7 and we got down there at 1:15 and then we caught the bus back at 2:30. But parts of it were beautiful, parts of it were rocky, parts of it the streams, we had to get our feet wet to get across the streams. Life is like that. And faith, if you want a good faith story about growth in faith, look at John 6. Faith is that kind of pilgrimage, that kind of journey. And the story of sowing and sowing and sowing again, is I think a sort of strong encouragement to keep on the path, keep moving along.
It isn't linear either. I think there's a cycle to it of being the good soil and then falling back into, like my faith has gone like this.
And that's right.
Dry seasons.
Dry seasons, the deserts.
I think when it comes to talking about our faith, we underestimate how much we are like of plants and soil and earth and growth, how organic we are. I think one of the demons of our time is the laying on our civilization of a mechanical metaphor rather than a organic metaphor, because we are more like plants than we are like buses. And we're much more like, and really, we're much more like plants than we are like pianos. Poor musicians, do they have a burden? They try to treat themselves like an instrument and it doesn't work. Doesn't work. What else do you want to do with this story?
Thank you.
I can't quite see. Okay, Bob? These are the alumni of last week.
I hate to disagree with my wife, but I think this is...
I think it's about time you did it in public.
I think this is a parable about obstacles. I think that in 20th century USA, everybody can hear. Everybody's heard. And I think that... the last line where he says, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear," there isn't anybody in the USA who isn't hearing today. What's happening, though, is that it's not growing. It's not growing, not because people aren't hearing, but because there's obstacles. And I think that if we're going to do something with this parable, we have to look at the obstacles today, just like they did in the first century, or just like the people in Central America have to do when they look at what this parable means to them. To us, I think we have to look at what are the thorns, who are the birds, where are the rocks. And I think we have to look at things like our lifestyle, national security, personal security, and things like that that are getting to be the obstacles against taking care of the sick, looking at oppression, things like that. That's what this one means to me. If we're going to do something with this, we have to look at what our obstacles are.
You've really plugged that into your own story, haven't you? These folk have been to Central America, and they have a wonderful story. And they're doing something about it. And the punchline really is, big crop. You were right on at the beginning when you talked about the joy of the crop, the sense of grace, the sense of overwhelming goodness. And I'm sure for the disciples of Jesus, one of the really important things in this text is the celebration of with the goodness of creation, that some of the stuff grows, the goodness of their relationship with the Lord and the sense of grace that would get them through on the journey. Think about it. It's a very low-key text. You're going to have to work hard this week. You're going to have to work hard this week and share, because it's not... These stories of Jesus are pretty simple and almost cryptic. They're maybe even open. They're maybe even open, waiting for you to finish the story. Because when all is said and done, the word the spirit comes to full, complicated, complex human beings and human communities, and we're the people that have to work out the tasks, and sow the seed, and harvest the crop, and celebrate that harvest. Tomorrow I want to do two parables. Actually, I'm picking the two of them because a student of mine did an absolutely bang-up paper for a seminar this spring. Her name was Laurel Johnson, and one of them is about a woman who hunts for the coin, and the other one is about a shepherd who hunts for the sheep. And she showed the group that both of those stories have the same plot, only one's a woman doing woman things and another is a man doing man things, and that Jesus has both of them in there. You'd almost think Jesus treated people equally.
No.
And that women had a different place in the Jesus community than they had later. That's it.